Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. Travis Ryer alongside my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard of First Coast News down in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, of course, also a voter for the most prestigious individual honor in all of collegiate athletics, the Heisman Trophy. Brent, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about on this Thursday morning. We are live, by the way, here on Ryer on YouTube. So if you'd like to jump on board in the show chat with the comments, we would gladly get to those as they come through. Big slate on Saturday, Brent. Chino, our show mascot, right there, popping into the screen. I know Chino is very excited, as is yourself.
That's right. Absolutely. Oh, that we had our first CFP rankings. We've got a good slate of games that are coming up this weekend. Still keeping an eye on the Heisman Trophy. And Trav, I get to speak to the Jacksonville Georgia Bulldog Club as they've got a big game that we will be talking about soon.
Yes, we've got Georgia Ole Miss this Saturday. We got Alabama LSU. We've even got Oklahoma Missouri in that primetime window. So start to finish Saturday should be a lot of fun. But you touched on this. That initial college football playoff rankings reveal that we had a couple nights ago. I guess no real surprise there, Brent, when we work through this list. Oregon checks in at 9-0, undefeated, the number one ranked team in the CFP. Ohio State coming off that road win at Penn State, 7-1 in the second spot. As it relates just to SEC teams, though, Georgia there in the three spot, Texas there at five. You've got Tennessee checking in at 7, and the Alabama Crimson Tide in that top 12 for now, in the 11 spot. So let me put it to you this way, based on what we saw and what we know is still to come, because you've got Texas A&M at 14, you got LSU at 15, Ole Miss at 16. If I were to tell you today on Thursday, November the 7th, that the over under for SEC teams in this first ever 12 team playoff is 3.5. I'll go 3.5. SEC teams right now for that over under. Would you go over that, Brent, or are you going to go under that?
I would say maybe to go over that possibly. And your question really details why these commissioners in the SEC and the Big Ten want four, right, Trav? Four at least.
Minimum.
Guaranteed. Yes. Yeah. Spots for their conference. But there's so much still at stake, and there's still so much that we just don't know. And I'm going to throw in here the importance of this strength of schedule. Georgia's strength of schedule is 1. The reason Bama's 11 is their strength of schedule is number 11. Mm-hmm. Texas 54, for instance. Tennessee is 33. Now, I'm sure this caught your eye, but Trav, all this excitement about Indiana, and again, this may change some, obviously, but that Indiana strength schedule is 103.
Yeah.
So Trav, if it's between Indiana and another team, that committee is going to be looking at that strength of schedule, aren't they?
They are, and, you know, Indiana and the non-con, nothing.
Right.
And even within the league, you know, I know Michigan coming up, Ohio State still on the schedule, but that's really about it. And that's not to undervalue the job that Kurt Sagnetti has done in year one. There have been just as easy or easier schedules that previous IU coaches didn't come close to navigating, close to winning 9 games. So all the credit in the world to Kurt Sagnetti.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, you're not going to see Oregon if you're Indiana. You're not going to see Penn State in the Big Ten. So those are a couple of the CFP ranked teams as we see them right now from the Big Ten ahead of Indiana. You don't get those opportunities if you're IU, but you know, you take care of business. I think IU might bomb Michigan in Bloomington.
Yeah, they might. Good point.
Now, Ohio State on the road, we'll see. I'm not that sold on Ohio State either. You know, I know the win over Penn State was viewed as sort of this monumental victory and all these things. Losing to top five, top 10 opponents is what James Franklin and Penn State does.
Yes, so that's right. Yes.
That win for Ohio State didn't really resonate with me. But, yeah, it's going to be fascinating for Indiana, BYU with the Big 12. And then Boise State in that group of five sort of designation as well.
Well, one more caveat to this. Notre Dame is 10. They are – but their strength of schedule is 75, and they're going to get a lot of grief to that. But I can tell you what Trump's strength of schedule is. You and I both know.
Brand.
Those eyes on the television, the committee's never going to admit this, are they?
Right.
But you can't tell me for a minute that Tennessee and Alabama, Tennessee, Notre Dame, Alabama, some of the teams that are really bringing in the TV audience, that behind closed doors, that is going to be a big deal when it comes between, say, two or three teams.
Yeah, just based on resume, I think Notre Dame's as high as it should be right now in the 10th spot.
I agree. Yes.
Now, we can have a debate at this point about Notre Dame's brand. I guess there is still hard data that supports that Notre Dame, in terms of eyeballs and television rankings and things like that, is still a preeminent program. I will say, of the supposed blue bloods, I won't call Notre Dame elite, because Notre Dame as a program to me is not elite.
Yes.
At this point, it is a blue blood. Historical, you know, those type of things, brand recognition, I still get that. But I probably watch less of Notre Dame football than I do any of the Blue Bloods.
Sure.
And it's not even close. And a lot of that this year has to do with Notre Dame's schedule. Why would I want to watch Notre Dame
right
at this point?
Yeah.
I mean, I watched like the last 5 minutes of the Northern Illinois game, because Northern Illinois had a chance and went on to win in South Bend. And probably it's not helping Notre Dame that an opponent like Southern Cal coming up, that you think with Lincoln Riley's going to be, you know, maybe 7-2, 8-2, something like that. That's not going to be the case for Notre Dame. And that still could be a stumbling block for this Notre Dame team. I don't really trust Notre Dame in a lot of scenarios right now, unless it's kind of maybe an academy school or something like that. But it is very interesting. And I go with you. I think it'll be four SEC teams when it's all said and done. I guess the intriguing part is we still don't exactly know which four it might be.
No, that's right.
And that's where this weekend is so big, because if you're LSU, if you're Ole Miss, and you're sitting there at 15-16 in these rankings, you absolutely have to get it done, just like Alabama has to in that matchup LSU. So really what we're looking at for the upcoming weekend is more of a playoff feel to this thing already as we get into mid-November.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And listen, to back up your point about Notre Dame, they are more than a 3-touchdown favorite over Florida State. And in past, Florida State would have bailed Notre Dame out as far as strength of schedule. Trev, that ain't happening this year, is it? So
if Florida State and Southern Cal aren't helping Notre Dame.
No, and that's amazing, but they're not. That's very true.
And it's great that you brought up that, because that's another game, because of the ineptitude of Florida State.
Yes.
That you would have thought back in August, boy, we'll be talking about Florida State, Notre Dame.
Absolutely.
You know, in early to mid-November. It's a total afterthought.
Yes.
So let's talk about the show chat here. We got Tex Tider checking in, says, howdy, boys. We can always count on Tex. Jen House checking in and just wants to offer up a Roll Tide. You can do that, Jen. That's a big game coming up Saturday night at Death Valley for the Alabama Crimson Tide. And that's what we're going to do right now. We're going to get into previewing week 11 And it's going to start with the Florida Gators traveling to Austin, Texas. I got an older brother that's making that trip out there today, Brent. Right. He is in the air as we speak, along with my nephew. A couple of loyal, lifelong Gators had to make that trip, even with the uncertainty with their football team right now. Mm-hmm. Got to go to Austin if you haven't been out there. But the Gators in a tough spot. I guess it's been optimism, really, though, this week where DJ Lagway is concerned. Will he play? Won't he play? Based on what we saw last Saturday in Jacksonville, it felt like there's no way he would play. Perhaps he wouldn't play the rest of the season. But what's the sense that you get right now here on Thursday? And we'll look at the SEC availability report, too, to kind of sum up some of these injuries that these various teams are dealing with. But for Florida specifically, understanding where it is at in terms of the quarterback situation, what's your expectation maybe today for DJ Lagway?
Well, the timing is everything in life. And early this morning, I had a podcast with Shane Matthews, the former Gator quarterback who won a couple of SEC Offensive Players of the Year. Shane made an interesting point about this. He said, look, I know that there are reports that he practiced yesterday, probably didn't do a whole lot, but Shane said, and Shane's been on all levels, obviously, college and pro, he said, whenever I've had a hamstring, it took me four games to get back.
Yeah, now, it's rough.
You know, that's not saying now, Trav, with what the technology that we've got now, that you can't get back pretty quickly. But look, you and I both know, as long as we've covered this game, those things are tricky, aren't they?
They are. Yeah. And there's degree.
You got to be careful with that.
Soft tissue situations, there's various degrees to them too. And there's locations of the strains or the pulls.
Yeah.
You know, is it a high situation with the hamstring? So you see this line for Texas at -23.5. I think that in large part goes back to the situation at quarterback for the Florida Gators. But it's not just Lagway. You look at this availability report that I've got pulled up here now. Montrell Johnson continues to be a questionable situation with his injury. Elijah Badger, who has stepped forward in some ways at the wide receiver position, listed as questionable. Damian George, a key offensive lineman, questionable. And that's before all the guys at the top of the list that are out. We know that Eugene Wilson III, here in the last few days, underwent a hip procedure. Treyon Webb is out. Yes. Now, look, I know you look at Johnson, you look at Webb out, but I'll tell you, man, a couple other running backs I thought really stepped it up against Georgia. And that's really how Florida's got to try to stay in this game, probably even if Lagway somehow gives it a go.
Yeah.
The backs have to be, and the offensive line have to carry this thing if Florida's going to have a chance of being competitive Saturday.
Look, to me, the guy they really need back is Montrell Johnson. Your point is a good one about some of these young backs, but that's a guy who can take it 25 carries if he needed to in a tough game and take some of the pressure off. And you know, one thing about this game that is interesting is, look, I like Quinn Ewers in a lot of ways, but the reality for Quinn he has had really been up and down. Last three games, Trav, six touchdowns and four picks. That Gator D is playing better. Could they get another one maybe on Saturday to help the cause?
Yeah, he's been a little Carson Beck-ish, I would say, in some ways. And so that's what it's going to take, though. I mean, it's going to take Florida being very opportunistic, +2, +3 maybe, in turnover margin, controlling the game with the run game, regardless of whether or not Lagway goes or not. And one thing Florida can do is kick the football. Now, they don't always get the snap and hold right, as we saw last week. Against Georgia, they do punt it very well, and Trey Smack can kick it. So if you can get it into that kind of game, there are some avenues that you like for Florida in this matchup with Texas. And we have a Texas viewer here. We have Tex-Mex 325 checking in, Brent, who says, good. Texas fan here. Welcome to the show, Tex-Mex.
Absolutely.
Before the year, I thought our offense would be our strength, but it has been our defense. I hope our offense can put four quarters together or we do not win out. I think that speaks to sort of the consistency that you were talking about, maybe not just exclusive to Quinn Ewers, but certainly the quarterback position is going to be a big part of that.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. And look, and as far as Texas, they and you mentioned this, they go to Arkansas, and then you've got Kentucky and A&M. So travel, all those games are not slam dunks for them. I mean, we know what that A&M is going to be, and that's going to be lunacy in that situation. But I can tell you what, two, I'm fascinated about that Arkansas game in that, and again, that game's at Arkansas. If the Hogs were healthy, that can end up being a fourth quarter game.
Yeah, and in Arkansas with a much needed bye week this week, so that could prove beneficial in sort of getting the Hogs reset and rejuvenated for that stretch. And it's critical to Arkansas as well, as we'll talk about that more next week. Obviously, Arkansas looking to solidify bowl status under Sam Pittman in a very pivotal year for the Arkansas head coach. Now, from a Texas perspective, kind of back to Tex-Mex's point about the play on defense, Vernon Broughton, one of the defensive linemen for Texas, out for the first half on Saturday. So, you know, maybe Florida early can exploit things. So, again, even if it is sort of the inconsistency from the Texas offense that we see on display Saturday, I think that it's just going to be extremely tough for Florida without some help from Texas to keep that game especially close. I don't know if it's 48-7 or anything like that, but it's a game you could see Texas win, kind of like maybe the Mississippi State game in Austin earlier this year. Not exactly a work of art, but at the end of the day, pretty clear Texas the better team by game's end. Hey, let's keep it moving, and we will roll into a big one in Oxford. Number 3, Georgia at number 16, Ole Miss. That is a 3:30 Eastern kickoff Saturday on ABC. The Georgia Bulldogs, just a 2.5-point favorite on the road against the Rebels. Ole Miss coming off a historic performance at Arkansas last week on the offensive side of the ball. You know, we talked about Georgia also with the quarterback position, not quite sure what you're always going to get from Carson Beck this season. Georgia dealing with some continuing injuries of their own. This is another great spot for Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. Historically, this has not been a great spot for Ole Miss, it seems like. But with everything on the line, Ole Miss can send a seismic signal throughout the SEC on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, they really could, and it's a game they really need to win. I had a chance to talk to a Georgia beat writer last night to just kind of get some thoughts, and he said Beck is struggling on a lot of ways, but one of the reasons he's also struggling is last year he had Brock Bowers and Ladd McCarthy to bail him out. So, I mean, let's just be honest about that. He also said he thought – They really thought Oscar Delp would be much better at tight end.
And said it's actually been lucky, the other tight end that's maybe been more impactful than Delp.
No question. And they've also had some offensive line injuries. Tate Ratledge may be back, and that would help. They're thinner than people realize at running back. I mean, ETN with the rib injury, that's going to be interesting. Yeah. They love Cash Jones. Well, you and I talked about Nate Frazier and Kirby meeting him about half the way as he's going to the bench.
Every game.
At that point, Mikael Williams being back on the defensive line is a help. Jalen Walker has been a beast at linebacker. KJ Bolden, Malachi Starks have done well. But look, and he pointed this out. Trav, this is not the Georgia team we've seen the last two or three years, is it?
No.
There are flaws in this team, and Kirby has said every week, we don't have the depth that we need either.
We saw Tate Ratledge check in because of an injury at the offensive guard position against Florida last Saturday. So he did get back into action, the outstanding interior offensive lineman for the Dogs. Small Munden, potentially, in doubt for this game. The outstanding inside linebacker for the Georgia Bulldogs. I don't worry about that as much for UGA because, as we talked about, I don't think this is the type of matchup. Now, look, Lane can get in his bag with the backs and the tight ends and get you in some tough spots with your inside linebackers. We've seen it in the past. But I think Georgia can be okay there if Munden is either limited or out. Right. I think the depth still is good enough at the front seven spots to hold up. I think this game is similar to the Alabama game in that if Lane is doing his thing and Jackson Dart is doing his thing, there could be a sizable, manageable advantage for Ole Miss after a quarter play. It could be 10-0, 14-3, something like that. Mm-hmm. If it isn't, then you really worry for Ole Miss because that will tell me it will have already gotten into the kind of game that Kirby and Georgia wants. And you know, from the Ole Miss side of things, you really need Trey Harris this week.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, you look at this Ole Miss availability report, Jordan Watkins went off last week, but I see him here as listed as doubtful in his own right. So if for whatever reason you don't have Watkins and Harris, to me that becomes a really, really tough situation to kind of overcome, even with everything that we know Lane can draw up. And Henry Paris Jr. listed as out at the running back position. So when I start looking at it in terms of the people around Jackson Dart Saturday, it becomes problematic and it becomes enticing. It be that -2.5 for Georgia becomes very enticing.
It does.
Now look, you look at this Ole Miss injury availability. It's almost like Lane lists the whole damn roster on here. You know, I mean, it's like he's trolling.
Yeah.
You know, and Lane wouldn't do that, right? Lane wouldn't troll. He wouldn't troll the SEC office with, you know, everybody on the roster pretty much being on the injury report. But no, I mean, you start listing people as doubtful or out, typically there's some legitimacy to that.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. And look, to their credit, I give Pete Golden some props. I mean, they basically, the nation in sacks, that they're going to have to block Walter Nolan and guys like that. But, Trav, I can't help it, but I just come back to this. We did the same thing with Nick Saban. These are the kinds of games that Kirby wins.
Yeah.
I'm not a great believer in intangibles, but I am for this. The toughness mentally in the fourth quarter, Trav, if this is a close game, Georgia usually wins games like this. Can Lane get his bunch over the hump in a gargantuan game at home like this?
Yeah, if you're Georgia, if you survive the script early, first 15, 20 plays, and you're even just zip-zip or 3-3, 7-7, something like that, I think you're in great shape for the rest of this one when I think about the Georgia Bulldogs. Hey, let's keep it moving there in the mid-afternoon on Saturday, Brent. South Carolina coming off a huge home win over the Texas A&M Aggies. Kind of like we asked the question of Texas A&M after a huge home win over LSU. Was it mature enough, capable of taking it on the road in a potentially tough spot at South Carolina? We found out that was not something that the Aggies were capable of last Saturday night in Columbia. Going to ask that about South Carolina coming off that win over A&M, now taking it on the road to take on those pesky, pesky bowl eligible Commodores of Vanderbilt, Brent.
I would feel better about South Carolina. Yeah, but I don't know how much I try. I know he's improved. I give him credit for that. But I don't know if this is a game Lenore Sellers is ready to win. Do you? I've got a lot more confidence in Diego than I do with the South Carolina end of it. And look, South Carolina is legit defensively, but frankly, so is Vanderbilt. I give them some credit on that side of the ball, what Clark Lee has done. But again, we come back to this, and it shows you the strength of Vanderbilt. Trav, can South Carolina, as good as they are defensively, or are they like everybody else just about, will they get worn down with this death by a thousand paper cups of Vanderbilt getting 3 yards and 4 yards and 3 yards and 4 yards and end up with another one of these 9-minute, 80-yard drives like they did with Auburn?
It's a great question. The thing that gives me hope for South Carolina on the road this week is that I've seen South Carolina play really well on the road this season. True. Bombed Kentucky on the road early in the season. Bombed Oklahoma on the road its last time out. Argument could be made, should have beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. So whatever Shane Beamer's been doing on the road this season, just keep it going this week in Nashville. Really? I think it's a great point about Sellers. I think there are enough safeguards in place for South Carolina on offense to kind of keep him from that catastrophic mistake or two. So I'm going to go South Carolina. I'm the president of the Diego Pavia fan club, and I know better than to go against Diego the Door, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to go South Carolina. I think both these teams are comfortable with kind of a 17-17 game.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
The way they're built, I think both of them are very comfortable with that. And then I think about Vanderbilt from a health perspective, maybe a few more questions with that team. You know, Diego's on the injury report. He's listed as probable. If he has a pulse, Diego's playing.
No doubt about it.
Even the backup quarterback, Nate Johnson, listed as questionable. That's the thing about these two offenses, too, and especially Vanderbilt. You expose your quarterback to a lot of
hits. Sure do.
You do. And so when mid-November rolls around, it accumulates on those guys. And it was a pretty big injury, I think, too, for Vanderbilt defensively. Defensive lineman Bradley Mann tore his ACL at Auburn last week, and so he's out. So those are the type of injuries that we don't talk about enough probably, but they could prove important, you know, as you move along here for that Vanderbilt defense. Hey, let's get into, we've got Mississippi State at number 7, Tennessee. The Vols, a 23.5-point favorite. It's a kind couple of weeks. Although Tennessee had to work last week to get that win over rival Kentucky. Perhaps that'll be the case again this week against Mississippi State, especially if this Tennessee offense continues to slumber for big parts of opening halves.
I don't get that. I really don't. And look, even Georgia's done that in having a slow first half. But Tennessee has absolutely I mean, they have just sleptwalked through most of the first half. So they've got, to me, this is a Dylan Sampson game. If you want to get this thing over with pretty quickly, just be able to just give him the ball and let him go. I still think he's undervalued, although people are beginning to wake up a little bit about how he's done. Mississippi State, as we talked about earlier in the week, I mean, there are so many categories on defense that, you know, there's 134 teams in Division One, and they're either 120 or 130 in just about every category. So, man alive. Well, I think, Trev, I think we know what Jeff Lebby's going to be concentrating on in the offseason.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm still not totally sure about Coleman Hutzler as the architect or the coordinator of that Mississippi State defense. But to be totally fair, State doesn't have the people right now. On defense, it's not even close. So not exactly fair, I'm sure, in a lot of ways to issue judgment at this point of the Jeff Lebby regime, really just about any area of that football team. But I agree with you, based on that Mississippi State defense, shouldn't be too taxing on Tennessee to get up to the line of scrimmage, run the football, take some shots off of that. and win this game pretty comfortably before things get real next week.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
For the Vols. And you talk about college football playoff hopes. No doubt about that. So with that, we keep it moving. The varsity game, Saturday night. Number 11, Alabama. Now is a 3-point favorite on the road.
Wow.
At number 15, LSU, 7:30 Eastern. That game will be televised by ABC. You a little surprised by that number for Alabama, yes, given that the Crimson, yes, Tide is trying to avoid a 3-game road losing streak? Alabama in early November, Brent, still in search of its first SEC road win,
man,
of the season. And we're in November.
Yeah, that tells you a lot. No doubt about it. This still a line of scrimmage game in a lot of ways. Bama's front seven on defense against the LSU offensive line, which may be one of the best in the league and certainly also in the nation. But Garrett Dellinger is out. You called attention to this a few days ago. I think he had the tightrope surgery. And so that hurts them to a degree. How is Garrett Nussmeier going to be? I'm curious your opinion of this. You know, now he might, but Garrett Nussmeier, Trav, is not a real running threat. To me, is one of the more accurate quarterbacks in the league. And can Bama be able to get pressure on him? But again, to me, this comes down to how would Jalen Milroe, how would he deal with the crowd? He didn't deal with it well at Tennessee. Will there be improvement? They've had a week off. I'm sure they've worked on footwork and reading defenses, vision down the field, and so forth. I mean, I could see Milroe playing very well in this game. He certainly did last year. But can we also give LSU some credit? Bo Davis on that defensive line, coaching that group. Corey Raymond is there. That they've gotten better. I mean, the numbers still aren't great for them. But in many, many ways, this is a fascinating game in that they thought there'd be a lot of rain for this game because of that hurricane.
Right.
But I understand it, that hurricane's going to Brownsville, Texas, and maybe even to Mexico or something. So hopefully the weather won't be a factor.
Yeah, that there's degrees to that, you know, potentially. But it doesn't sound like it's going to be monsoonish in Baton Rouge Saturday night. So relatively dry, I would think. But – you know, if I told an Alabama fan back in August, okay, here's the guys that are going to be out for the Alabama game. Harold Perkins Jr., John Emery Jr., Garrett Dellinger, and Jacoby and Guillory, they're all going to be out.
Yeah.
You're going to be relatively healthy coming off a bye week. And oh, by the way, LSU, CJ Daniels, the wide receiver, is questionable. West Weeks, the linebacker this week, is questionable. I mean, if I told you that as an Alabama fan, you'd have to like your chances pretty good, even with Keon Sabb out.
No doubt.
Even with Cole Adams now out for the rest of the season as your primary punt returner and complimentary wide receiver. So, you know, in a must-win spot, it sets up pretty good for Alabama, although I know Alabama fans pretty well. So there's always that sort of fatalist thinking that this is a game where a guy that was at Alabama, like Aaron Anderson, who is now at LSU, catches like 6 balls for 175 and 3 touchdowns.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, I know how Alabama fans think. So that's a scenario. Those are the kind of scenarios I'll be keeping an eye on Saturday night and see what exactly plays out there. But Southern Red checking in here, speaking of Alabama fans, she says, very surprised by what Las Vegas sees. Who knows what Bama team is going to show up Saturday? It'll be a Mylanta moment for sure. I like that, Southern Red. Pretty good with the Mylanta moment.
Clever.
That's what I'm saying, though. I mean,
with
the way this thing kind of sets up, and Nussmeier gives them a puncher's chance, whether he always makes the right decision, the right throw.
Right.
He is a gunslinger.
He
does not mean slanging it to Kyren Lacy and Aaron Anderson and the rest of those guys. And we're going to talk so much about that, that I think for Alabama defensively, the key is going to be to make Garrett Nussmeier throw it 40-plus times. Because if Josh Williams, Durham, and that run game are complementary enough, then you got a real, real problem if you're the Alabama. It's a big game for Kane Womack, too.
It is. I agree.
And we'll talk about the other side of the ball in a minute, but this is a chance for endearment for Kane Womack in this Alabama defense.
Yeah, and Trav, I'm curious your thoughts on Cole Adams out for the rest of the year. What a shame, wide receiver, and particularly as far as a punt returner. Trav, I thought he was one of the best punt returners, frankly, in the league.
Yeah, very, very, very adept. A guy who gets it in terms of making the right read on punts. You know what you're going to get back there. And also a guy that punt returners you're looking for skill set wise, that guy that can make at least the first guy miss. Because if he can do that, he can typically go get you another 10 yards after the catch. And I think Cole Adams does that. So will it be Ryan Williams? Will it be Jalen Mbakwe? How does that work on punt returns for Alabama this week? And then when we talk about the Alabama offense, after what we saw the last time, that group took it on the road in front of a hostile, massive crowd. How does Alabama handle that from a penalty perspective? Yeah, you just can't have the type of messy performance like you had Knoxville the last time you went on the road and expect to win in Baton Rouge Saturday night.
No, that's a problem. They don't need 15 penalties like they did in Knoxville.
Nope.
And obviously ball security is going to be very important in this game too. So and some people even wonder if LSU may be a little bit ahead of what they thought they would be, and that next year this team would be better. But and by the way, Brian Kelly 13-0 in night games. Under his tenure at Baton Rouge.
How about that? That's a pretty strong number. I also heard a stat that the last four or five Alabama head coaches in their first trip to Death Valley all lost those games.
Man.
Now that doesn't size up, though. I heard that stat, and then I thought 2008, Nick Saban, in his first visit to Death Valley, Alabama won. Now, maybe it's just their first game in the series because Saban and Alabama lost in 2007.
Right.
But, it should have been a learning experience for everyone involved when that team went to Knoxville and coming out of Knoxville, because I think there were some communication issues that maybe weren't thought through that well in terms of quarterback to the offensive line to making checks, those type of things. And, you know, I don't know if this will be the craziest LSU crowd from the outset Saturday night. It'll still, relative to everywhere else, it will be.
Yeah,
but that's why it's important for Alabama to get off to a good start and not get in the hole like it did at Vanderbilt or leave opportunities on the table like it did at Tennessee and kind of give that crowd even more reason to be involved deeper into that game. I just feel like it's going to be a four-quarter game like it was a couple of years ago down there.
Yes.
I think the X factor in this is a Jalen Milroe legacy type of game. In terms of his time at Alabama, and this isn't the only one. I mean, you play quarterback at Alabama, there's going to be multiple legacy games, but you know, you play well. He went for 155, four rushing touchdowns against LSU last year. You know, if he's able to kind of have that dynamic return to the previous Jalen Milroe we saw maybe before Tennessee, this team has a great shot of winning on the road. Otherwise, LSU could be right back in this college football playoff picture by Sunday morning, Brent. So let's wrap things up Saturday night with the OU Sooners. How about a throwback matchup here? Going back to what, the old Big 12, I guess it is?
Yeah.
Oklahoma at number 24, Missouri. Missouri with some questions from a health perspective, as we know. This is what did last week really mean for Oklahoma type of situation for the Sooners, because it was Maine, but the rushing numbers look good. Jackson Arnold looks to be playing with some confidence that we didn't see even earlier in the season since being reinserted as the starter behind center. It's really a game in Missouri, so it's a show me game, I guess we could say, for really both of these teams at this point in the season.
Well, to me, Trav, and I help me on this, I think he's doubtful. Will Brady Cook play in this game?
Yeah.
That's the big one. And I can tell you this, I would imagine that after that performance in Alabama for Luther Burden, he would be glad to step up things against Oklahoma. But that Oklahoma D is still one of the better ones. But look, again, for bowl positioning and so forth, people may think there's not much riding on this game, when in reality, I think there is. Particularly for Brent Venables at 5-4, how big is this game for him?
It's huge. Sooners need to get bowl eligible, you know, and the value of that, we've talked about that many times before, especially for a team in this type of situation to have the extra practices, the extra experience. Now, look, I fall on the other side of that sometimes too. I think sometimes it's best just to shut it down, especially if you're a team decimated by injuries.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
If you're going into a bowl season and you've got 15, 20 guys that you can't really continue to develop and work with, maybe it's not always the best thing. But, you know, Oklahoma, we've talked about that wide receiver position. I look at the availability report here. I see a couple of guys continuing to trend towards a return to the field, but questionable. A couple of those guys, a couple of three of them still out at the wide receiver position. Yeah. Javonte Barnes, after a big performance against Maine last week, questionable for this week. But you touched on it. The big one's Brady Cook. And secondary to that, Nate Noel, the Missouri running back, because his value is immense. To that Missouri run game. I totally expect Brady Cook to give it a go, especially since he did in Tuscaloosa and now has had a bye week.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess it's a multitude of things now with Brady Cook. If it was as simple as a lower extremity like it was going into the Alabama game, that'd be one thing. But then he had the finger, the hand injury against the Crimson Tide. So it's not as simple as just one setback that Brady Cook's looking at.
No, but again, further emphasis, Oklahoma needing to win, particularly with teams like Alabama coming there later on in November.
Yeah, I mean, you got Alabama, and I think Oklahoma goes to LSU to cap the regular season, if I look ahead at that right, going off memory on that. So,
They do. I just looked it up. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So it doesn't get easier. This looks to be a good spot for Oklahoma to at least send a message to that fan base to stabilize things a little bit, maybe continue to build belief in Jackson Arnold for the future, and more importantly, Brent Venables. I mean, that's kind of where we're at at this point. Hey, Brent, there you go. That is a preview of your upcoming weekend. Boy, it's a big one in the Southeastern Conference.
Sure is.
Always love the input from Brent Beard, obviously, here on the program. So, Brent, you got anything else for us before we get out of here?
Trav, Arkansas, Auburn, both off. If folks are wondering why we haven't called their name, that would be it.
Arkansas, A&M.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, A&M too. Arkansas at 5-4. Trav, I'm being funny here, and yet I'm not. This week, when Hugh Freeze puts his head on the pillow, does he dream of Diego Pavia during that time? Maybe, Trav.
He's trying not to. I don't know. You know, I don't know if he's sleeping well in general. You know, about anything at this point. But it's an important opportunity for some of these teams to kind of again reset. And look ahead, Arkansas with Texas coming to Fayetteville week from Saturday, and some of the big matchups that aren't just going to impact the college football playoff. That's the primary focus. But again, some coaches that really need to hit that 6-win or better mark, kind of feeling that as well. Brent Venables, Sam Pittman, Shane Beamer has that opportunity this week at Vanderbilt. So we want to take care of that. And then the uncertainty involving Billy Napier too. What if DJ Lagway doesn't play this weekend, what qualifies as acceptable? And last week it was fought the whole game. You know, the effort was great. The game plan looked good. Did have another special teams failure that was massive for the Gators, but there are sort of beauty pageants with some of these for some of these coaches too, in terms of their foreseeable future.
A really unfortunate injury, and you and I both like this guy a lot. A&M running back Le'Veon Moss out for the year. Man, I just hate that because Trav, he was having a really good year. A difference maker for the Aggies that they're having to get over that, certainly having to get over their loss. But, boy, you know, those things are just so unfortunate when you see them. But it's a part of the game, unfortunately.
It is. And what I really hated about that injury was that he was doing something I love to see from a running back. Mm-hmm. He stayed in bounds and was trying to go for an extra 2 or 3 yards. He was trying to finish a run, finish a touch with some physicality and some strength. And guy goes low on him, it looked like. I mean, that's football today. Yeah. I mean, that's the strike zone, you know, and especially with a physical guy like Le'Veon, but just a tough situation. And again, we talked about it earlier in the week. Sounded like there was some optimism initially.
Yeah, it really did.
We learned that he is out for the remainder of the season. And, you know, that's tough. That's tough for the Aggie offense because now they're down to just a couple of, you know, healthy scholarship backs. And they got, you know, a guy like Terry Bussey that they can move around, do some different things with. But in terms of legitimate options in an offense that wants to feature the running back in a lot of offenses these days, it's a tough blow.
It is. And Trev, I'll end on this. Florida, Georgia, Georgia, Florida, whatever your preference is for our listeners, will be staying in Jacksonville. Folks have not heard. The game will be here in Jacksonville next year. Then in 26, it'll be in Atlanta, 27 in Tampa, then 28 through 31. Back in Jacksonville, a big, big victory for the city of Jacksonville. Now, what's a big victory for both those teams? Now, Trev, and I give Mark Weissner credit for this, who is a Georgia beat writer. He's saying $10 million each per game for those two teams. Listen, Travis, as much as we've been doing this and talking about neutral site games, did we ever think that kind of money would be thrown around and offered in a neutral site game? I think it's worth every penny of it to be able to keep it, but that's still staggering to see that total, isn't it?
Yeah, they're going into in 2028 in Jacksonville, Florida, and Georgia will be going into a $1.5 billion stadium. That's the price tag for what's going down on the banks of the St. John's River there. From a venue perspective, but hey, ESPN, ABC, baby, they make the world go round. And that's where a lot of it comes from too.
I mean, it is.
The TV, but the cities, they definitely step up. And as we've talked about, when you think about the financial impact for the weekend to a place like Jacksonville, Florida, it adds up. No doubt about it. Hey, Brent, appreciate it again, my man. Enjoy all of the great college football action this weekend. I look forward to talking about everything we saw coming up early next week.
Good. Can't wait, bud. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Hey, coming up on the program, or on the channel anyway, we're going to have Talking Tide. We're expecting to do that later tonight with Brent Beard. Excuse me. Chase Goodbread. He's another great friend of mine. Chase Goodbread of the Tuscaloosa News is going to join me right here on the channel. So Alabama fans, we're going to have Talking Tide coming up for you later tonight. And if you haven't subscribed to our channel here, we certainly hope you'll do that. you'll also hit us with a thumbs up, a like, that would help us out tremendously as well. For Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube. And until next time, so long, everybody.